So, welcome to the back room of politics. Since the 24th of February 2022, we've all seen both the devastation, the misery, and particularly the courage, the extreme courage of the Ukraine people as they fight back against the unprovoked invasion of their country by the aggressor nation, Russia. Described as Putin's war, despite the success at repelling the Putin army by the Ukraine army, the cost measured and human suffering simply can't be measured. When we see those brief glimpses of death, devastation, dispossession, and deep human misery on our television sets almost nightly, like me, I'm sure most would say, what can we do? What can we do to help? What can we do to stop the misery? How can we help Ukraine win against that aggressor, Russia? When those questions are applied to a government as a government response, they end up being quite complex. And as you people will be able to see, internationally, there's no difference. Assistance is being given, but perhaps there is another way of looking at particularly the human suffering here. So life for Ukraine people continues to be one of not only divesting them of their ability to live freely, but also the constant threat of what might be coming from their skies or their nearby flat land. One New Zealander has decided to do something practical to help, to get on the ground, to give assistance through a special purpose NGO called KiwiCare. That special New Zealander is former Army officer, businessman, local government politician, and as I say, great Kiwi, Tembi Powell. He joins us today in the back room of politics. Tembi, welcome to the back room of politics. And tell us, how did all this get started?
Thank you very much, Jerry. Appreciate you having me on the show. I think the first thing I'd just like to say is that I'm one of a number of New Zealanders, certainly not one and only. As you know, we've lost three wonderful New Zealanders in the last 6 to 9 months, Dominic Ablin and Kane Te Tai, two wonderful soldiers who used to serve with the 2nd 1st Battalion, Royal New Zealand Infantry Regiment, who died fighting for Ukraine's freedom as part of the International Legion. And then very sadly, of course, we lost late last year, Andrew Bagshaw, who I'm sure you all know, very well known Christchurch family, and under tragic circumstances during his rescue of an elderly lady in eastern Ukraine. And I think, you know, what Andrew felt that he needed to be there for out of moral reasons. And I think all of us that go there feel something similar to that. So to answer your question, sitting in, as I was in beautiful Tauranga in February 2022, watching the television screen in utter disbelief as some 40,000 soldiers together with heavy armor poured across that border. And, you know, just watching what was happening, the level of human suffering, those women and children walking in huge columns, kilometers long, just trying to get themselves west out of Kyiv at that time, I found incredibly moving. And I watched in disbelief and I thought that I really do have to do something. And that something has somewhat, you know, quickly really on the one hand, but with a bit of thought, quite a bit of thought, evolved into this thing called KiwiCare, Kiwi Aid and Refugee Evacuation. And, you know, we've now been operating there, well, goodness, really for a year, to be honest, with three quite separate teams rotating in that time, together with other New Zealanders. And while we are still small and nimble, we are very much a multinational team today.
Some of that work you're doing, I'll get you to talk about that as we go through this, because I think that some of those more direct human stories are very, very compelling. But I think, you know, one thing I'd be interested in knowing is how did you actually get to the point where you were inside the Ukraine, making the connections that you need to make to get some of this work done?
Well, I first went to Warsaw. An NZD colleague of mine was living in Warsaw at the time, and he introduced me to a number of people, none the least of which was an ex-British Foreign Service chap who had worked and had lived in Eastern Europe and mostly in Poland for a very long time. And I became great friends with this guy, and he introduced me to a range of people. And the idea in the first instance was actually to work in his business. He's a very successful businessman now, with what we would call strategic fundraising. And he said, as he described it, they've all got blitzkrieg fatigue, which is they're just desperately tired from constantly working in their businesses and supplying humanitarian aid to Ukraine. And look, I thought that was a good idea. Sharon, my wife Sharon, agreed that that would be a good thing for me to do, you know, given my age, Jerry. I'll come back to that actually in a moment. But of course, the inevitable happened, and I was offered, I got a call out of the blue from an Aussie bunch who have a great operation running, and they just needed a driver. They were short of man. And so I went in, and in that 2 to 3 weeks of being in Ukraine, we drove, in my memory, from Dnipro in central Ukraine on the Dnipro River, the city of Dnipro, then down to Odessa, and then across to Mykolaiv, at a time when Mykolaiv was still under artillery fire in the sense that Russian elements were still, you know, in range of artillery, and they were hammering away at it. The volume of human suffering that I saw at that time, I just, you know, it moved me literally to tears on a couple of occasions. And I thought that, you know, we have to do something more. And I had this burning desire really to start a New Zealand flagged operation. And actually within 3 to 4 weeks of coming back into Warsaw, that entity was formed. And we were back in Ukraine, you know, permanently, really.
And that distance that you're talking of, Ukraine's a big country. Second biggest country in Europe, I think, after Russia. So that's quite a distance that you were traveling. And I assume that over that distance, you were seeing that devastation, or are there parts of the country that would appear to be, you know, as if they are unaffected?
Oh, look, very much so. If you draw a line from, say, Kyiv down to Odessa, anything west of that is, in the main, mostly unaffected today. Certainly Kyiv was, you know, very affected during the first a few weeks of the initial attack in 2022. And then if you draw that same line and look east of it, it's very affected by the war. Yeah, I'm being very, you know, crude about this geographical line. But if you live right out west in Lviv on the Polish border, other than missiles coming in every now and again, and a military presence on the, particularly the northern border, you know, with Belarus, you really don't know there's a war on, other than block posts that you've got to go through to provide identification. That becomes significantly different after Kyiv, where it's very heavy security. And where we were living in Kharkiv, only 40 kilometers from the Russian border, and say a 4 or 5 hour drive, you know, east from Kyiv, you really know it. It's in constant blackout, military units operating in and out of that area constantly. And then, you know, going further east again into places like Klimatorsk towards Bakhmut, Balaklia, where the mass graves were found, Izyum, where the mass graves were found, there were others found in Balaklia, where we have been doing medical aid and delivering humanitarian aid, you know, there is no doubt that there is a very, very significant military operation going on.
So your KiwiCare NGO, what are you actually doing on the ground, and how's it working? I know that you're very shortly about to go back into Ukraine.
Yeah, and in the most simplest of terms, we take humanitarian and medical aid forward to areas that are in the red zone, areas that mostly have been newly liberated and can't get constant supply, or they haven't seen any help of any sort for a long time, and they don't have logistics going in and out on a regular basis. And then where needed on the way backwards, we do evacuations. And we have done some very long haul evacuations. I'm thinking now of one from the Zaporizhia evac center. We took families, some 1,300 kilometers in a big van we have, really almost to Lviv, in and around that area. And of course, the longest evacuation we've done, which was widely reported in the New Zealand media, with that of an elderly woman out of Mykolaiv, living under horrific circumstances, and we took her right back to Poland, and that was about 1,500 kilometres. So, Jerry, you're quite right. Ukraine is a huge country, and the distances we travel are huge. And, you know, I'm conscious of, you know, that we do a lot of driving, and sometimes people would say to me, why don't you use the train? Why don't you use third-party warehouses? We have done that, but I'm very protective of our humanitarian and medical aid, and, you know, there have been occasions when that has been stolen, and we just refuse to accept that.
Yeah, that it gives us a little bit of a snapshot. of some of the work you're doing. If you were to characterize the intentions of your NGO, how would you do that? I mean, I think one of the things that struck me in conversations with you is that you're very direct in what you're able to do. Well-resourced for the work that you're doing. Obviously, more resource, the better the opportunities for helping people. Tell us a bit more about your structure and how it all works.
Well, look, that's absolutely right. I mean, I want to retain a nimbleness and I want to retain an agility that we certainly have right now. But at the same time, you know, safety is paramount for the team that I've got with me. And, you know, we aren't going to take crazy risks. But in terms of how we configured, we're going back after my 5 months at home with a real lift in both operational capability and I think very significantly geographical reach, in the sense that we've got these 7 ambulances, which are now on the water. These are ex-decommissioned St. John ambulances, of which 5 will go to frontline medical units or entities where there's a real need to have that transportation capability.
Can I to interrupt you, but can you tell us a bit more about how you got hold of those 7 ambulances? Because that's a significant gift from St. John.
Yeah, absolutely. So 7 ambulances, it started, my recon trip into Ukraine is how I describe it in my own mind, where I was just full of ideas. I'd seen so much, you know, so much hardship. But one of the things that we did do not long after that was conduct a pop-up clinic. And in my memory, this was in Ballyclare. I can't actually remember exactly where it was, with a doctor and with a Canadian nurse, both ex-Canadian Army. And I was thinking, looking at the line, the queue that formed outside the van, the consultation that was being given by these two wonderful women. And, you know, we were running out of daylight. We were running out of resources. And we were running out of time because Ukraine is under a curfew. And while, you know, we have on occasions had to talk our way through block posts, it's never easy when you're traveling, outside of a curfew to explain yourself. And so I thought to myself, we can do much better than this, you know, working out of a van. And one of the things that, you know, struck me that we needed were just very basic things like oxygen, for example. I mean, some of these people haven't seen medical help of any sort, and I include in that dental assistance for sometimes years. And we forget that, you know, Russia has occupied part of the Donbass since 2014. And so while the areas that we're in are not exactly those areas yet, although I suspect we will be there, having that capability to be able to go in and really offer something consultative and just genuinely give humanitarian care and by health professionals was something that I had a burning desire to do. So I called back to a friend of mine, actually an ex-military officer who had been a director of St. John, and said, look, can I get your advice on how best to approach this? He was amazing, as he always is, and he put me on to some equally amazing people. And Jerry, I can tell you that St. John were just a dream to deal with. While we had, you know, conversations about how, what, and why, they have a huge fleet of vehicles, you know, many of whom, which are being decommissioned every year, and they're always looking for homes for them. And they were only too willing to support this with this block of 7 ambulances, which I hope we'll be able to repeat. I mean, I'd like to think we can get 107 ambulances over there in time because the need is huge. And I think contextually for your listeners, Jerry, there have been reported over 700 attacks on Ukrainian hospitals, of which at least 150 have been destroyed. So any medical asset is of great need, and particularly one that's got a good mobility capability.
Yeah, he's a real tough guy, that Putin, isn't he? Bombing hospitals, unreal. How do you get on with some of the bigger international organisations, humanitarian organisations, who I think are doing some work in the Ukraine? That would be the likes of the Red Cross, various others of similar type. I note that they are very big structures. They are commanded or controlled from a central point. Even the New Zealand Red Cross is linked up to the International Red Cross. But How do you differ from them, and what's your relationship like with them?
Well, look, firstly, the relationship is very good. But we differ from them as chalk would differ from cheese. I mean, we're a dot compared to the Goliath that they are. And as I said, and I use the word specifically, nimble, being nimble and being agile are extremely important to us. And while we work within a very professional framework, and as I mentioned, particularly safety, you know, I'm not going to put our guys into positions where, you know, through lack of intelligence gathering, if you will, or reconnaissance, and by that I mean really just talking to locals to find out what the situation is, you know, I would, you know, I think that we have a real ability to be a left and a right hand with particularly Red Cross. Red Cross food parcels are second to none. They are just absolutely amazing. And we carry them in boxes, you know, I think some are 8Ks and some are 13 kgs, and we have taken them into areas where we will have some Red Cross staff with us, but they themselves, as I understand it, and certainly understood it late last year and into December, they weren't permitted to go. And I've reached out to Red Cross at very senior levels, and I've got meetings when I get back in Kyiv to understand what that's all about. And I think I know the answer. It's all around safety, and there's a demarcation line in their minds that they will not cross or allow their staff to cross. And then to say, well, look, if that's the case, how do we partner with you better? Because the reality is that we have driven past brand new Land Cruisers parked up with Red Cross staff waving at us as we left to go further east into red zones, carrying Red Cross parcels, their food parcels. So it strikes me that, you know, we are in desperate need of the right vehicles. Maybe if we can develop a strategic partnership, we can drive their vehicles. I doubt that will happen because they are a bureaucracy. And bureaucracies can certainly, you know, they've got a place. And I think the structure that they've got is in the main a very good structure. But when I, you know, it is frustrating for us to have all these wonderful assets sitting around idle, mostly in the areas that we operate in, particularly where we're, you know, I was on a 22-speech fundraising tour around New Zealand, desperately trying to scratch up funds for a 12-ton truck, another 4x4, and to be able to get CapEx and OpEx to run the ambulances and our existing vehicles. So I would hope that we might be able to do something. I don't know where that will end up, Jerry.
Look, I want to talk to you about the New Zealand government contribution to the effort in the Ukraine so far. But first, you mentioned your fundraising tour where you gave, I think, a very good presentation of that was quite tangible in connecting people who are interested to the reality of life in the Ukraine. I think that should have, I hope, helped you a lot. But I guess one of the things I'd ask is, you know, if people are interested, recognizing that if they make a donation to the Red Cross, that's great. There's no question about that. But a more direct way of getting assurance about where your dollar's going might be to look at an organization like KiwiCare. How do people go about that? How's all the fundraising gone so far?
Look, it's been amazing. I mean, the speech tour was extremely successful, as I had hoped it would be. And I've got to say, and this is germane to Ukraine as well, Rotary New Zealand were incredible. I gave a number of speeches at Rotary clubs. And I say that because we have a tremendous relationship with Kharkiv Rotary, and I'm about to extend that to Kyiv Rotary as well. I would say that the Kharkiv Rotary warehouse is singularly the best that I've seen in terms of its size and scale, and also its management and processes particularly. And we welcome, you know, going through, you know, what are pretty arduous processes of collection and then delivery and reporting to make sure that, you know, it's all above board and they know exactly where their humanitarian aid is going. And I think we've learned a lot from that, from Rotary. So they've been amazing in New Zealand, and they are amazing to work with in Ukraine. We have a Give a Little page, Jerry, which is our prime source of fundraising. It's simply KiwiCare, care with a K, KiwiCare. And that's gone really well. And we've had just the most tremendous support. As you know, this group of 70-plus-year-olds, wonderful and very well-known men who live on Waiheke Island, started Waiheke Trucking for Ukraine, and they raised $73,000 in short order for us to buy a 10 or 12-ton truck. And this is, of course, Sir Graham Henry, Brent Impey, Paul Dyksel, And, you know, men who are, have been well-known in business or sporting fields or whatever it is. And I can say now that we, all those guys are now directors or trustees of KiwiCare, which will soon be registered as a New Zealand charitable trust. And we're, you know, I'm going back very soon. And today, this afternoon, I'm going to be spending a bit of time on the admin of finalising that with the wonderful support we've had from Russell McVeigh. And look, this is all pro bono. All the people that I mention, I do so because Russell McVeigh have been incredible in the advice they've given us to get registered in a hurry. And I wanted to do that before I go back because I think it's going to help relationships and particularly with Red Cross and entities like that, because we want to go back there saying, look, we have had, you know, a year on the ground. I've been back here for 5 or 6 months. We've come back with a completely different level of operational capability, but also we've looked at what we did and we've made it better. We've, if you will, you know, learned from things that we felt we could do better or wanted to be able to do better, and we've grown considerably, including in terms of that registration as a charitable trust.
So those things that you talk of, the fundraising for the trucks, fundraising for the ambulances. There's also been a number of interesting sort of in-kind gifts to the Ukraine. I particularly think of great little woolen manufacturing country, woolen clothing manufacturing company at Christchurch called Weth, who sent literally thousands of beanies and scarves, very practical for people. Give a little page, KiwiCare. It's obviously something that I'd encourage people to have a look at. The New Zealand government's contribution so far has been around $80 million approximately. And that's been in sort of cash donations or through the British system to try and get into, you know, effectively purchasing weapons for the Ukraine, is my understanding. I'll stand corrected on that. And we've also got the training mission in both the UK, and I think some offices in Belgium. There's also some military personnel in the Belgian headquarters, etc. If you were advising the government right now, and I'm opening myself up a little bit in that regard, what would you be saying would be a very practical thing that New Zealand government might be able to do to assist the work, not only of your organisation, but clearly the organisations you're working with?
Sure. Jerry, can I just wind back I just want to agree with you about the support in kind that not just KiwiCare, but New Zealand is giving to various entities over there. Wonderful Christchurch company, Tait Electronics, has been incredible. We have digital radio from them that I'm taking back with me. You know, we have operated with digital radios. They are literally a lifesaver when you're on, you know, those deep ops, keeping a small convoy together or just keeping people together. Shipping company Wallenius Wilhelmsen, they're taking these 7 ambulances across for free, and that is an incredibly hard logistics exercise because it also comes with, you know, all the AML requirements, you know, the legal requirements, yeah, of who's going to own the ambulances, where they're going to go, and what have you. So we've had incredible support, and including from New Zealand's medical profession. You know, it's probably wrong of me to single out anybody particularly, but I do want to say Doctors Michael Klassen and Julian Loft, both plastic surgeons, have been unbelievable. They have provided, I think it would probably be around $70,000 of the collection of medical aid, including, none the least of which, is an anaesthetic machine from St. Mark's Hospital in Remuera in Auckland. You know, these are the things that we have. A full warehouse down in Tauranga that I've got a warehouse manager who understands Ukraine very well, who's going to pack all the stuff up into a 20 or maybe even a 40-foot container and get it across as soon as possible to put into our warehouse in Walsall, and we'll get that all that stuff forward. So I just wanted to reinforce the tremendous support we've had from New Zealanders. In answer to your question on the government, look, I actually think the government's done pretty well in the main. I think we've, you know, we've been pretty practical. We've trained the Ukrainians on the 105 guns. They don't want 105 guns, Jerry. You know, and I've talked to artillery regiment commanders. You know, if it isn't 155s or bigger, and, you know, with a great mobility capability, like the Crabs, for example, they're really not interested. And I think this, you know, this emphasizes the nature of what is still very much an artillery-focused war. It's about to change soonish, And, you know, one would hope that the F-16s will arrive, which will absolutely change everything. The New Zealand government's also, as you know, provided, you know, instructors from the battalions. They've worked with the Ukrainians in the UK, presumably on minor tactics, but platoon level, platoon minor tactics. And the Ukrainians are very, very good soldiers. They're a lot like us. They fight like us. But they will certainly learn a lot from those battalion instructors. And they will take it back, and they'll turn it into something, you know, incredible in terms of those, you know, dismounted operations out of infantry fighting vehicles. If I could wave a wand, though, and, you know, if I could whisper into the Minister of Defence and the Minister of Foreign Affairs there and say two things, I'd ask them for one thing each. I'd ask Minister Mahuta for a greater contribution to medical aid on the ground, and not via Red Cross. So I would ask it to be delivered via KiwiCare. And even if it was just a greater level of support for two things within that, one is a greater vehicle capability, or at least the OPEX to run those vehicles, or to actually enable us to go and get other vehicles so we can really lift our platform. I mean, if we had 50 vehicles of various sorts for delivery, I mean, we are, at its very basic form, Jerry, a trucking company or a courier service. The external evacuation is a little bit different, I acknowledge that. But if we could get support of that stuff, we could really lift KiwiCare as a significantly New Zealand-flagged operation. And then, of course, I could get a real structure going on. And with government support, we could, you know, we could compress time. We could end up in 6 months from now with a very significant entity. So that would be for Nanaia Mahuta. If I could whisper into Minister Little's ear, I'd say, please don't give the light armored vehicles, colloquially called the LAVs, away to anyone other than Ukraine. And while, you know, a eight-wheeled vehicle is not ideal in the Donbass, in what is a very heavy armor-centric war and about to become more so, what they are absolutely ideal for is to work in an armored ambulance role. And, you know, we are often being asked, and this I'm talking about KiwiCare now, if we can provide any armoured ambulance capability, to the point where I had some meetings with some very senior people in Kyiv about could we purchase or find a way of getting into the country M113 tracked armoured ambulances. And you'll know that the APC 113 variant comes in many forms, not just an armoured personnel carrier, but there is such a thing as an armoured ambulance as well. And we kind of looked at that, but it was well above our pay grade. So when I come back to what the New Zealand government could do, they could help us do this on the ground. I wouldn't expect you know, the New Zealand government to deploy people as far forward as we are going, you know, other than in a military role, and we know why we can't do that at this stage anyway. But we can operate really successfully and effectively in those red zones. And I'm really hoping, Jerry, that, you know, we will be right behind as much as we can the forward units in the counteroffensive, which, you know, is clearly going to come from Kherson onwards and maybe even with a two-pronged approach from Bakhmut east from there to follow up to be able to provide humanitarian aid to those people who have literally been living under siege now for months and months and months. If we had, you know, an armored capability that we could, you know, really help get some seriously injured people out, we could go even further forward. And they don't.
That would still be very much humanitarian assistance that very much so. Providing.
I mean, look, the New Zealand government, I'm sure, if this was to come to be, would give them to regiments as armoured ambulances. But unlike, you know, the way that we operate, and I'm talking Five Eyes now and NATO, in terms of casualty evacuation, it's very different to anything that we would have trained in, which is, you know, a combat lifesaver on the ground, back to an RAP, regimental aid post, back to a CCS, a casualty clearing station, and then onwards to a field hospital, and then rearwards to a general hospital ultimately. The field hospitals the Ukrainians are running, as brilliantly managed as they are always well forward and mostly with an artillery fire. So, you know, there is a real need to have an armoured ambulance evacuation capability. I'm not suggesting that KiwiCare should get these LAVs at all, but I am suggesting to the New Zealand government that if they could rethink what they want to do with them ultimately, the Ukrainians could put them to good use, and they may end up being, most likely will end up being, in a non-combat role. But they would be a great vehicle to bring people out of out of, and I'm talking civilians as well, not just wounded soldiers. You know, give us a great capability.
There's no doubt, you know, the work that you're doing there is of extremely high value. And New Zealanders who contribute to your efforts can be assured that it's going to make a difference to the lives of a lot of people. But there's also the aspect of you yourself and your team of people who are equally committed, and I've met a number of them, are living or going to be living and operating in dangerous places. You've already mentioned the deaths of the two former soldiers who were part of that United Force, and of course Andrew Bagshaw, who's from a wonderful family who have a true humanitarian ethic to the way they live their lives. How do you handle, and more than that, if I could be a bit personal, how does your family handle you being away in dangerous circumstances like that, notwithstanding that you've come from a military background?
Yeah, look, the truth, you know, if I'm going to be really honest, is the family aren't great with it. Shannon and the kids struggle with it a lot. I know both George and Charlotte, my children, have, you know, become pretty concerned to the point of being angry with me for doing this. Sharon, I think, has a very different level of understanding of why I'm doing it, Jerry. And, you know, and if I'm going to be really, really upfront here, you know, I was diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer and had a prostatectomy in late 2019, which is why I resigned from the mayoralty. And, you know, the reality is that I live my life in 6-month blocks based on blood tests. And I had one only a week ago, and I'm clear. My, you know, PSA levels for the men that are listening to this is non-detectable. And I will take the liberty on your podcast of saying to all men, really 50 years old plus in New Zealand, get tested regularly because this thing will just creep up. So given that, you know, I decided that there's a whole lot of things that I really wanted to do. And part of that is looking at, you know, it was never about going into an area like Ukraine, because at 60, nearly 63 years of age, I really am too old for this nonsense. And when I use the word nonsense, I'm talking about, you know, the stresses and the conditions under which we live on occasion, but not always. You know, you need to be a much younger person, I think, to make it effective. And I'd love to think just on that in times to come, I can pass KiwiCare across to somebody younger who's got, and I think it does need both military and business experience to do it successfully. The military stuff is obvious, but the business stuff, particularly in terms of relationship building, is critically important. We mentioned Red Cross, but there are many other organizations as well. It's not easy, really, at any age. But I think, I've come back tired. I came back extremely tired. And, you know, 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't have been as tired. So it is what it is.
Yeah, look, Tembe, I'm sure anyone listening to this would find not only your work admirable, but well understand the feelings of your family. And I think their generosity in allowing you to do that, do this work is quite extraordinary and pretty special. So can I thank you very much for joining us in the Back Room of Politics. It's been an interesting insight into what's actually happening on the ground for the average Ukraine citizen and some of the stresses that they face. And it's been interesting just trying to pick out between your conversation when you're talking about different things, getting that mental picture of what's actually happening. And I think sometimes it's too easily sort of misunderstood that life in that country is utter misery at the moment. But the deep courage that nation has shown is, to say the least, admirable, as is the work that you're doing. And so thank you, Tembe. I think you certainly are part of a big legacy of New Zealanders actually doing things and making a difference in the world. So all the best, and travel well, and stay safe.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Really appreciate the time.